car, and what are we on, the 405? Where are we at?
I think we're still on the 405.
We're going to Willow Springs. Got a couple of my buddies in here. Our Grid Life Drift lead, Nick Swan, and our Grid Life Do Everything, probably going to take over my job, hopefully, Mike Cohn. What's up, buddy?
Hey, what's up?
Been talking with Nick for a while. Nick's main gig is at Fortune Auto, and I'm actually going to put a custom set of their coilovers on my hatchback real soon. And I'm like, why aren't we just like talking about Fortune Auto stuff on the podcast instead?
Yeah, I feel like everything we're about to talk about is like stuff we've already just gotten done. But yeah, it's fine.
Because fuck, Cone wasn't paying attention, right?
No, so. Yeah, it's all new to me.
Yeah, that checks out.
Yeah, if it's well for the listeners, if you haven't heard it, it's new to you. So
yeah. And this is my first time on the podcast. Yeah. Actually, yeah, so that's pretty cool.
See, I think Abe Botter is going to get a set of coilovers.
I think Abe's going to get. I think we're doing 510s for him as well. I think that's what we set up for his 8th gen, right?
Yeah, it's a Mugen SI.
Okay, yeah, that's right, Mugen SI. Yeah, so we're going to do 510s, and he got some spec recommendations from the guys at Professional Awesome, which.
Nerds.
I know you guys are really good friends with, and we Fortune Auto have been working with Pro All for
a long time,
years,
like
yeah.
8 years, or something.
And they've done a lot for us too. Like that's kind of like it really harps on like what Fortune's built on. It's like for enthusiasts by enthusiasts. Everybody at Fortune Auto is like an enthusiast of some level, of some degree. So to get to work with someone like Professional Awesome over the years has really helped us develop our product and. Make a better product and offer so many like setup options.
Yeah, you talk mainly to like Mike and Dan over there. Or?
Mike
is like head nerd. Over
yeah,
there, so.
Yeah.
And they just started their own show. They talk about your stuff a bunch. So where am I going? Am I going to 210?
Yeah, I think
my phone's not telling me to. I don't think I'm going. Sorry, we're lost.
We've been on the 405 like for so long, but now it's like breaking up.
It's up a little ways. Looking for 14. So.
Okay.
I'm on Radar Cruise, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And I think I'm on 14 over there. Yeah. We can follow this truck then. So you were just saying that you guys are bringing a lot of manufacturing in house, also.
Yeah. So as anybody that's done any sort of like research on Fortune Auto, or anybody that's been following us long enough, or takes the time to read the captions that I write on social media. We harp pretty heavy on the fact that we are, it's a custom hand-built coilover. And
right.
Like you and I were talking about before we started recording.
I didn't know everything was basically made to order.
Yeah, everything is, if walking through our warehouse, like it looks like there's just sets inventoried ready to go, but they're not. Every set pretty much essentially starts out as just all the components of a coilover, over 100 components. Per shock, and think about that kind of spread out in front of the technician that's about to assemble it. And I haven't found a way to like word this correctly, like on social media, but we take a very similar approach to our coilovers the same way as like AMG does. Like it's like one man, one engine.
Right.
We're the same way. Like one technician builds each shock of a set. Assembles the components. We dyno test and match them. On our motorsports line.
Do you get to put a sticker on that says like hand assembled by Hans?
So what we're actually thinking about doing is doing something more along the lines of AMG and each yeah. set coming with a badge with the technician's name on
That's
it.
That's kind of a cool idea. Actually.
But right now what you get is a certificate of assembly, and it has the coilover handwritten, the coilover specs, the technician that did it, mm-hmm. the date they were built, and the chassis they're for. So
So basically, if somebody wants to order a coilover and or coilovers from you guys and have them ASAP, there's only a few ways they can do it, and that's from dealers that did that already.
Right.
And
we
stock them.
We have a handful of dealers that do stocking orders.
Our buddy Dewey's been on the show a few times over at Six Star, and they're like a big Subaru dealer for you guys.
Yeah, Dewey's a hammer.
Damn, this Radar Cruise is hammering.
Dude, I love the fact that it's like hammered down. Yeah.
All you gotta do is steer, man. I can.
No, Dewey's rad. He does a lot with us, and we've been working with him for a while on his race program, and now also with Six Star, and he moves a lot of products, so we really love working with him. But and I'm not sure if Six Star does stocking orders yet, but yeah, we do have a handful of dealers that will order. So if you look at our either of our websites, we have a main website that describes all of our products. We also have our online store, which is shop-fortune-auto.com. And if you go to our store and you go to 500 series for, you know, an EF Civic, and you scroll to the bottom where it has a drop down for you to select spring rates, the pre-selected rates for each application are the recommended rates.
Right.
But that only goes so far for like race cars or
track cars,
heavily modified cars, because our recommended rates are only shown on 500 series.
Okay.
And the reason is one of the main objectives of the 500 series is to replicate, if not in most cases, improve OEM ride quality, but still give you that adjustability, the damping and ride height adjustability of a coilover. So, but with 510 series, our Dreadnought Pro 2 and 3-way, even our super low spec also comes with recommended rates, because they're based on our 500 series.
Right.
It's an overvalved 500 series standard with Swift springs and generally 2K heavier rates with shorter bodies, shorter springs.
Do you know how Fortune got started? Like,
man, I'm not going to do this story justice because I wasn't around at its conception. Terry Awad, my boss, good friend, I don't believe would be described as like a typical business owner. Like, he's there every day with us. Like, he doesn't have some big gnarly office on the third floor. We're all just like in this shared workspace, and you know, he's always in the thick of it with us. He got into the best I can recollect, the many times I've had him tell the story. You know, he was doing road racing of some level, and decided that he could just build his own.
Right.
And it kind of started there, and it was Fortune Auto has always been in Richmond, Virginia, or right outside of Richmond, Virginia, and it's just kind of grown since then with that for enthusiasts, by enthusiasts, yeah, approach.
And like the organic growth model of like, we're not going to take a $100 million loan
for sure
and buy 12 sea containers worth of,
exactly,
worth of Chinese coilovers.
Exactly.
Not that there's anything wrong with some Chinese coilovers.
Because no, I mean, I think again, that's that, and this is a whole other thing. But like, we're asked all the time, hey, how do you guys compare to brand X, brand Y, brand Z? And I never, and literally never, do a side-by-side comparison, Fortune Auto versus anybody else, right, only because professional courtesy, like respect for the industry. I think everybody's got a place in the industry. I think the pie's big enough for everybody to have a slice. And honestly, like, I mean, sure, there are bad products out there, but, you know, with all due respect, like, the coilover companies that we're being compared to, they don't make bad coilovers,
right,
but we can build you a better coilover for what you need.
For a really similar price in a lot of those.
For a similar pricing, in most cases, generally a bit higher. But
for listeners, like, Swan has sort of like heavily sold me on for the last 2 hours. We've been hanging out in this stupid Dodge minivan, and I'm like, wow, that's really cool. Wow, that's awesome. I didn't know that. It's been kind of fun. So it's, I was like, why haven't I ever been recording this?
Yeah, I didn't know what you were doing. You're like, when you asked for Cone to hang you the bag, but yeah. No, it makes sense. No, it's an easy thing to explain to customers and
well, like, high quality seals and high quality oil and a good monotube design,
right?
Like, goes a long way regardless of who assembles it.
Sure.
But like, if you guys have the piston design that you like more, and you have, you were telling me about the new 2-ways and 3-ways that are coming out, and
yeah,
and we've seen some really good success in Grid Life Time Attack with Sean Krebsbeck's on Dreadnoughts.
Yep.
And Pro Awesome, obviously, is one of the fastest guys ever around Gingerman. I think they were like 1/10 behind Will's record or something.
Yeah.
On like a blown diff and a mediocre track.
Yeah.
And like 400 horsepower, because the car just was doing Evo things.
Right.
But so there, it's like, it's a proven coilover in my mind. Like, we're seeing really, really fast guys on these coilovers.
Well, I think that is credit to the fact that, again, when Because in, you know, this day and age, in 2021, or even for the past 4 or 5 years, every coilover is custom now, right? Like, right. It doesn't matter if...
Anything
good. Well, I mean, even still, like, you could be looking to spend $800 on a set of coilovers, and they'll call it custom just because
they've got
a surplus of springs, but they're going to put it on a shock that's not built for that spring, or that's not valved for the application.
Or their only shock.
Exactly. That's kind of where you and I got started on the subject, was talking about, you know, my main role at Fortunato is social media management and content creation, and alongside my friend Fizzy. And Fizzy, he does a ton of stuff at Fortune, far beyond just the marketing stuff. But as far as like how him and I work together, He'll shoot and edit the videos and the majority of the photos that we use in-house. I'll post them. I'll write the captions. I'll manage the posts and interact with our followers and things like that. But we've really kind of came through the past couple of years in leaps and bounds on Instagram, and we're approaching 100,000 followers, which is a really big thing for us. I mean, being such a small company.
Yeah, you're just a bunch of dudes building coilovers.
Yeah,
in Virginia.
It's cool to be approaching 100K. So the next project for us is YouTube, and I want to 180 back to what we're talking about. The reason I want to go into YouTube is not to jump on the YouTube train and become these internet celebrities or anything like that, or even monetize. We want to utilize YouTube because, yes, Fortunato is a custom coilover, and it is hand-built. That's all, like, pretty general knowledge now, but I believe our clients, our customers, our followers have become a little jaded on that, and they don't really know what it means, because so many other coilover companies claim to be custom and even, again, built by hand. But so many of them, not all of them, but so many of them, aren't building shocks. They're, like I said, they're just throwing a different spring rate onto a shock body and sending the set out and calling it custom. And they're not wrong by saying that, but...
Yeah, putting one of three different top pads on it.
Right.
Good.
Exactly. Yeah. So with us, like I said, it starts out as... And when I say, like, when it starts out as all the components, that's internal components. That's stuff you guys are never going to see inside the shock, the shim stacks and the piston. You know, we have a piston variation between our 500 series and our 510 series. And you and I were kind of talking about earlier our CFD piston, our ultra-digressive CFD piston, which creates this massive range of damping force adjustment and... virtually eliminates the need to revalve when you're changing spring rates compared to like a conventional shock or even our own 500 series, which is a less digressive but
unless
still
you do
digressive.
Like double the spring rate kind of changing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So you like I was saying, like generally 8 to 10K change in spring rate is totally accommodated by the CFD piston, which is found in our 510 series, which is what you're getting, which is what Abe is getting. Sully's getting them for his S2000, Chris Sullivan. Talking to Cone earlier today about his S2000. We'll be setting him up with 500 to 510s, one of the two. My M3 that I've put 20,000 miles on in less than a year on a 510 series, which is a race shock, but it's also usable for the street. And our dreadnought line of two ways and three ways are built off of our 510 series. And it's not like we have... a dreadnought department. We literally take a standard lower mount because
it's a monotube, right?
Yeah,
you got a shock body and you start building off of the one for the car,
right? Yeah. And then even like the lower mount. So because the majority of our stuff is not inverted with our two ways and three ways, the lines for the canisters protrude from the lower mounts.
Right.
We machine those lower mounts in house, so everything's upgradable too. Everything's modular.
Oh, really?
So if let's say that your EF years ago you started out with a set of 500 series, and the car got more competitive, it got lighter, it got more aero. We went to a 510. You send the 500s back, we rebuild them into 510s.
So it's the same body and everything.
Same body, yeah. We take the guts, we upgrade everything to 510. Even the mounts, if the mounts are in good enough shape.
Interesting.
We keep the same mounts. You know, the spring rates, the springs, of course, will change. And over the years, we're on our seventh generation of coilover, but over seven generations, we've changed the design of our everything, honestly, from Gen 1 to now. It's completely different. But for the past two or three generations, you know, we can rebuild and service and even upgrade a Gen 4 coilover into a Gen 7. And like I said, 500 series to 510, 510 to two-way or three-way, super low spec. We can add our air piston lift system. We can do all that in-house with the $1,400 set of 500 series you bought a year or two ago. And can you're never really in a position where you're forced to buy a whole new set of coilovers.
Right, and sell your used ones for half what you paid for.
Right, right. And for anybody that does have, like, generation one or two or maybe three. I don't think we service three anymore, but we do have like a trade-in program for that as well.
Interesting.
So I just dealt with this yesterday before I left the office. A customer has probably 10-year-old 500 series on a Subaru, and they've just had it. I mean, and that's just what happens. It's not a bad product, but they've just been used up.
They probably got 100,000 miles.
And they look like it too. And we can't service them. I got nothing for them.
But
what we will do is we will credit him about $800.
Wow.
And he pays the remainder and gets the difference between that and a new set.
Right.
And gets a brand new set of Gen 7 500 series.
That's kind of rad.
So, and then he sends us his old ones back, and you know, that's that.
Yeah, and you put them in the museum.
Yeah, yeah, we hang them on the wall. We put them in the.
Look what this dummy did to these Subaru coilovers.
Yeah.
But, oh my gosh, I think that's a possum skull dent. He must have hit something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a cool company that we've seen grow even in the past 6 or 8 years since I basically found out what Fortune was 8 years ago, maybe.
When, yeah, you were saying you, because I sent you a photo of the EG, old EG.
That was the first time I saw the name, and that was Todd Reed's car at the time. I think he doesn't own it, but he still drives it, and it's got the cool old, like, 10-year-old logo. Which
our first logo.
So I had those stickers made up again for my car.
And you're the only one to get the permission from us to use the old logo, which
in a different color,
so. Which I'm also super pumped on. I think it's going to fit your car perfectly.
I'm excited to try them and compare them to the shocks that I have. I really like they're Whitener Racing Revalve Bilsteins. Like they're not slouchy shocks at all.
And, but that's why I was so nervous to set you up. I mean, not that I'm giving, like, I know I'm giving you a better product that's got more life in it and way more setup. But at the same time, like, something else you and I were talking about earlier is, like, it's because I deal mostly with drift drivers and drift programs.
Right.
Road racers are so particular. You're very don't fix it unless it's broken. Right. And
yeah, you were talking about you had talked to some GLTC drivers about. A couple in particular of GLTC drivers and said, hey, would you be interested in trying out summer socks? And they're like, no, I really like what I got.
Yeah, they were which, super appreciative and polite, but they're like, no, what I got works. And I understand it's about lap times, it's about drivability, and it's about, you know, having the car do what you want it to do and be predictable.
Right. I love how my car drives.
Right.
There are sometimes, because my shocks are basically built for an old rule set that doesn't exist in NASA anymore.
Right.
Like, he bought a set of, like, really super pimp three-ways, adjusted them the way he wanted them for given applications, like an autocross spec and a road race spec.
Right.
And then dynoed them on the shock dyno he bought, and then spent, like, a week trying to replicate that same curve in, like, $35 Bilsteins.
Right.
Which is a brilliant way to, like, get around the adjustable penalty in whatever class, you know.
Right.
And still have a really good shock. But it's also, like, that's kind of defeats the purpose of even having that rule, you know.
Yeah.
But there's been times on track where I'm like, man, I really wish I could do this different a little bit, you know, just a tiny bit. So it'll be kind of interesting to have a similar, like, base curve and then go up or down a little bit in rebound damping. So I'm excited to play with the knobs and screw them up. So.
And with this year, more so this season than ever before for me, I'm doing more direct work with
it wants to crash into this truck.
I'm doing more and more work with road race drivers, HPDE, GLTC, Time Attack guys,
right?
And like I was saying, like, no disrespect to the drift community when I say this, but, like, you offer a drift driver or a drift program something for free, they take it. They want it. They want all support they can get. But with road racers, you know, like I said, they don't want to fix what's not broken.
If they know it and they like it, like, it might be tough to try something new.
Right. And
potential's
so
there, for sure.
So for you to take that chance and to go with a new setup, that's why I say I'm excited but also nervous for you to get your set, because
I'm gonna take them to Gingerman, where I mean I could put pieces of 2x4 in there and probably keep it on the wall.
Right.
But, yeah, I'm excited to do a test day with them. Yeah. So, like, you really more come from the drift world.
Right.
And obviously, you've worked at Fortune a couple of times now. You also worked at Turn 14 doing stuff there.
Yeah.
So you've been in, like, that world professionally for a while. How did you get into cars? Like, you've worked with us at big events for, what, 4 years?
Dude, this is my sixth.
6 year already?
Yeah.
How many years have we been doing this thing? Colin, how many years is Grid Life old?
I want to say
year eight.
Eight?
Yeah.
That's weird.
So I think I've been doing it six. We did Atlanta for 4.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so this would be your sixth year.
So 6 year.
How did you get into what you do in cars?
I was born into it, honestly. Like my dad was never like a racer. My dad barely even had projects, but he totally encouraged it.
He's like the car curious type?
Yeah, he's always had an appreciation for it. He's always been very, very hands-on. My dad's very much the guy that's like, try it. Like, if something breaks, try to fix it. Like, everything's there. Just take it apart, put it back together in the same order, and fix what's wrong.
A lot of people don't do that nowadays.
No, and I still talk to him. Honestly, I was just talking to him about it this past week, how I really appreciate how he taught me and raised me. And what's funny is, like, I hate working on cars. Like, I absolutely loathe working on cars.
It kind of can suck sometimes.
But if I have to or if I choose to, I'm not intimidated by it.
Right.
Just because of the way he taught me. But, again, like, you know, we never had, like, particularly fast cars in the family or, like, race car projects or anything like that in the garage. He's actually more of a motorcycle rider. He didn't ride while I was growing up just because of safety stuff, but once I was more grown up, he got back into motorcycles, and that's his niche. But
when I had a daughter, my cage got real ridiculous.
Yep.
Real
ridiculous. It changes everything, apparently. So, I think when the switch was flipped, it was 2001. Of course, this was like early internet days. This was before you could really be self-taught about sports cars.
It wasn't nearly as easy.
And nothing was as accessible as it is now. So I remember looking at like going to like tuner shops and touching option magazines and seeing drift cars and like, oh, so yeah, that's what it's like.
This magazine you hadn't seen. You're like,
right.
So you sit there for 2 hours and the guy just is like, hey, why don't you give me $5 for that, you punk?
Right. Yeah. And but it, for me, like, so I remember like looking at the JIC Magic RX-8.
Yeah.
I was like, man, like, Why isn't that over here? Like, when is it going to catch on? But anyway, I'll never forget. Like, it was 2000, 2001. And my dad's like, hey, there's this race in Atlanta in October. It was like September, October. And he's like, we're going to go this year. I got tickets. We're going to go. And it's like sports cars. It's called Petit Le Mans.
Oh,
and
really?
It means like small Le Mans. Like, it's like... It's like, yeah. It's an endurance race. I didn't know. And I were fans of Le Mans racing.
You knew what pro racing was, but like.
Yeah, I know. We were totally up to date on that. And like, because we would watch these, and this was like Speed Channel days, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like Speed Vision, Speed Channel. Yep. We would watch IMSA. We would watch like sports car racing and the, you know, what was then the American Le Mans series, Australian V8 supercars. I always gravitated to that more so than like NASCAR.
Mm-hmm.
Only because I thought they looked cooler. I just thought it was...
It's more of like a real car.
Too. Man, I love race cars built, like, designed over street cars. Or designed based on street cars. But, he got his tickets to go to the Petit Le Mans, ALMS, in 2001. And we did the whole weekend, man. We camped, and it was so cool. Like, the fan accessibility at those races was like... You could... Besides getting in the car and driving it, you get as close as you wanted. The pits were open.
That is the cool thing about that track too, is you can like walk right up to the edge of the track because there's a big catch fence, you know, and everywhere.
And I got jaded early on because the first real track I ever went to was Road Atlanta,
yeah.
And you know, it wasn't until later that when I started working in motorsports that I went to other tracks. And I was like, oh, this just isn't. Road Atlanta is so special. It's a nightmare to work with, as we know.
it's an absolute
nightmare to work with, but
yeah.
That piece
of asphalt is special.
That's what I tell everybody. The best thing about Road Atlanta is the asphalt itself.
Yeah.
And
it's real magical.
I actually like had a moment. The first year that we were all there, I called my dad. After we finished the first drift session, I called my dad before I got off the track. And it was so cool that where I got into cars.
Yeah.
was where I ended up working because you guys allowed me to do that.
That was a wild first event.
Man, it was a tearjerker moment for me.
Wild first event, wild last event.
The last event. The last event was pretty wild.
I'm just talking about Sketchy Bros.
We did push the limits on darkness on Saturday night.
The little bit of driving that we did at sundown.
Yeah,
the footage was so good.
Oh, it was so cool,
so good.
So Dustin in Race Control.
Yeah,
I'm sure his bosses won't hear this, but he definitely didn't have anything to do with this. I swear, cross my heart, hope to die.
Okay.
He definitely didn't encourage it,
mm-hmm.
but there was some really upper management that was real mad at us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely not Dustin's fault.
But, I mean, I don't know. Rules are made to be broken.
Well,
dude, the RV game in LA,
there is some
solid.
Crazy 1992 yep. RVs here, man.
Why does everything have grid life colors on it?
Yeah. Faded, too.
Yeah,
super faded.
Yeah.
We were riding around LA like waiting for Cohen for half an hour, and then we were looking for In-N-Out, and we had to go to Race Service to pick up stuff that Chris forgot. And the whole time we're like, "Damn, check out that sick car that you haven't seen in 32 years."
Everything's so preserved.
Everything is so perfect.
Because the Geo Prism.
Yeah, a Metro.
The Metro. Two great examples on either end of the spectrum of a Toyota, like T100.
Yeah. So many old pickups. Too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of dig the back corners of L.A. It's pretty rad.
But that was it for me. Like, Dad and I went to Petit Le Mans for, like, 3 consecutive years.
That flipped a switch a little bit.
And at that point, it was this weird moment of, like, reality. I was like, man, I'm never going to drive one of these cars. But I was, like, immediately okay with it. I go, I just want to be involved. But also at the time, I knew that I... like romantically loved drifting.
What was the first time you saw drifting?
Formula D round 1 season 1.
Really?
Atlanta. Yeah, 2004.
The first one?
First time I ever saw cars drifting in person.
You were there.
Yeah, again, because it was Road Atlanta. Cool. So I'm originally from Nashville, born and raised in Nashville.
Right.
So I was, you know, four or 5 hours from Atlanta.
Was that the first place they did an event?
Yep.
What?
So Formula D and again, this is a story I'm probably going to miss some facts on, but to my recollection, Slipstream Global was the outfit that Jim and Ryan, the founders of Formula D, had
right.
And at the time. And I believe it was like 02, 03-ish.
Okay.
D1 Japan came to America. Slipstream did a... They partnered with them somehow. Like, they were involved. Maybe they facilitated it or organized the event mm-hmm. with D1 at Irwindale. And D1 did D1 versus US, which is what Vaughn was. One of the coolest things Vaughn's ever done. Vaughn
right.
won, beat D1 drivers in a D1 event on US soil with a Mustang, of all things.
Right.
Which is sick.
Like that was like an 03 generation.
Which he still has, which I think is so cool. If you look at Vaughn's stuff, that's like trophy stuff. Like, he has the car that he won D1 with. But... I think there was like discussion where they were trying to bring D1 to the U.S. As a partnership with Jim and Ryan's company at the time.
Okay.
Again, like, I'm probably missing a lot of information here, but this is like
20 years ago stuff.
That's the craziest thing. This was like early internet days, so this is still like reading magazines days. And I remember like being at my like Dodo like first job, like working on a Saturday, flipping through like. Sport Compact Car Magazine, yep. RIP, which was the best car magazine ever. And there's like these full page ads for Formula D, you know, like American Drift Series. And I was like, man, this is going to be corny. We're not going to be able to do this well. And like the imagery for it was so sick. And it was, I can't remember how many rounds were in the first year, but round one of year one was at Road Atlanta. And I was like, screw it. So I rounded up my homies. We road tripped down.
That's
where I met Jared for the first. I didn't meet Jared, but Jared's there with his like mono lens, like big, like early 2000s style sunglasses and like spiky hair and camo shorts. And he's like handing out Gumball 3000 stickers. And Taka Iono's there with like a couple of 8086s and Tarzan Yamada had this. Yeah. Decommissioned JGTC Viper on street tires.
Really?
Competing, and I remember it actually competed against Taka's Corolla. So it was like a 600 horsepower car with like a gnarly like 300 millimeter tire versus a 190 horsepower Corolla on like 205s.
That's wild.
Forsberg. So this is why Chris Forsberg was Forsberg's always going to be my favorite FD driver, because his early cars were my favorite. He was driving a Motorex sponsored and Signal Auto sponsored Silver 350Z with an SR20 in it.
Really? That's cool.
Because it was early 350Z days, they couldn't really get dependable power out of the BQ, from what I understand.
Right.
So Signal already had like another SR swap to Z, so they went that route. And
I was at Motorex before they closed one.
Motorex.
Yeah, I was there and like in the dying days.
Yeah.
It was a weird vibe there.
I'm sure. But, yeah.
Yeah.
I just thought it was so cool to see a DRFT Arrow, right. DRFT body kit, Signal Auto, Motorex, all this branding, like Racing Heart Wheels.
Right.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think Forsberg was on Falcon that year too. Like that. But either way, to see all that and with back, an American driver.
Yeah, back then, this is like club racing. Like,
yeah.
They probably towed on an open trailer or a borrowed trailer. Like, this wasn't pro level anything.
Dude, I challenge anybody that wants to go back and see what drifting was. Like, because this was like the early days of Drift Alliance too. Like, Drift Alliance is still a thing. Like, it's still a logo. It's still a vibe. Like, Vaughn, Ryan, Chris.
Tony Angelo.
But Tony Angelo was like the founder of it.
Yeah.
And I believe if I'm telling Jared's story right, Jared is actually the one that named Drift Alliance. The name was Jared's idea.
Really?
Because it was originally ECDA. It was East Coast Drift Alliance.
Okay.
And it got simplified to Drift Alliance. But anyway, I believe at year like that year 04, maybe it was 05, whatever car Tony brought, maybe there was an issue with it. But if you watch the footage, he's competing in Formula D in a S13 coupe with like a factory passenger seat, like a super simple roll cage,
really?
Like maybe like a roll bar. I don't
know. That's wild.
But it was like an SR powered car, like probably 300 horsepower, mm-hmm. running Road Atlanta. Like the cars that
it was like Dave Coleman's project car from Sport Compact Car back then.
100%
super basic.
Super basic.
That's rad.
But it's like a lot of the cars that you and I will, or us three, like Cone even, like, we'll see in our applications for grid life, be like, nope, that car's not safe enough or like fast enough. Those were FD cars.
That's crazy.
We're turning down cars that used to be like FD cars
for the big events.
Yeah, right. It's insane how simple.
It's crazy to think about.
And the range of cars too. Like I said, like seeing a sub 200 horsepower Corolla go against a decommissioned race car trim Viper.
Right.
But even Braille Racing had remember the rear wheel drive ITR?
Yes.
That I saw that car. I saw it do a burnout. I think it broke something.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, but I remember he did the parade lap and did a burnout, and I go, that's enough for me.
That's cool
to see that happen.
First Road Atlanta event.
Because the B Series was still horizontally mounted. It was a CRB drivetrain.
Right, just with the back end.
Sans the front axles, yeah. So a lot of cool stuff back then, because a lot like any race series, the rules... they weren't curated to what they are now. So
yeah,
like,
no, you just start from zero.
It was it wasn't quite run what you brung, but it was
close enough for pro drifting.
And going back and watching footage from like 06 Soldier Field, where you guys are from, like watching this parking lot. First off, watching FD in a parking lot,
right?
But watching them tandem practice.
Matt Williams drove in that too.
Yeah. One of our Sunday Cup competitors, Spec Fit competitors, drove in that event.
Because you could. It was that accessible.
That was D1, I think. It wasn't.
Oh, the D1 Underground Series. I was there for that too. Yeah, I was working with the Grassroots Series.
Did FD go in Chicago too?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I went to Soldier Field for FD in 07, I think.
Right.
But before but after that.
Cool venue with the lake right there, too.
Yeah, super cool venue, especially for, like, a parking lot event.
Right.
D1 really set up well, though. I think D1 was 09. '09 was, like, my first real year of getting my feet wet with, like, working and drifting.
Right.
I was living in Indianapolis. I was working with a group of guys that are still around, still thriving, still doing rad events, Drift Indy.
Yep.
Even though they're Drift Indy, they're doing all other events at Killcare Raceway in Dayton, Xenia area in Ohio,
right,
which is a really rad track too. But my first, yeah, my intro into all this was working alongside Edgar, TR, Aaron, all these guys that were that are still a part of it. And we did our Drift Indy season. D1 did their underground like talent search. And we were talking about Derek King earlier in the FB that he's building for GLTC. Derek King was like our hero. He was our celebrity driver. And
really?
Mike Pollard, who's still around. He was there. Like, all these Drift Indy based drivers went to D1. And to see our boys go up against Team Orange and UAO and all these, like iconic cars and drivers from Japan was really, really rad.
Yeah, that is cool.
And the driving there was still cool. Like, going back and looking at the footage, it was still a cool event. But looking at FD from, like, 04 till about 08, 09, like, particularly, I remember going back and watching an episode of, like, FD Soldier Field, and there's a half a lap between the lead and follow car.
Really?
And they're still judging it as, like, a tandem.
That's not close.
It's crazy how it's changed.
Now it's like 5 feet's too much.
Okay. Yeah, it's like, yeah, if you get 5 feet, it's an active chase thing, something like that. So it's just crazy to see the progression of it. But yeah, anyway, 1,400 coilovers, man. Go buy some.
I think we pretty much did a show.
Yeah.
I got one more question. Like, you've worked with a lot of orgs, and then you also do basically like fun run stuff with us.
Yeah.
What do you like doing more? Is competition more fun, or is it fun to just, like, basically throw a drift party?
Competition is never more fun. It's never more fun.
Stressful?
It's not even stressful. It's just like, well, okay, so recently I told...
Because competition in grid life has me a lot more stressed than, like, HPD and drift fun.
Right. Yeah. As it should, because you know, you need to determine a winner or a loser. You need to determine all these things and be able to explain to people what they did wrong, whatever. I don't know. But, like, recently I told a team that's a part of another series that I won't mention their names. We were negotiating on getting me to run their grid for a competition series this year.
Right.
It's a series that I worked for last year. But because of some schedule conflicts with Grid Life and Holly LS Fest, I was only able to commit to a few of their events rather than the entire season.
Okay.
So I ended up not working for them. No bad blood. But I told him, I go, hey, man, like, don't worry about it. Because literally you can train an ape to run grid, like, for competition.
Right.
Because it's two cars that you know, green, like, red means stop, green means go. Make sure nobody jumps the line. Like, it's super simple. And I actually ended up going to their first event.
Right.
To help with the driver, not the series. And they had like five people operate, like trying to operate grid, and like rotating. But then I was like, man, I do that by myself during competition. I have to have, Conan and I have a great system for grid life. But it's not as fun because for me, it's not as challenging. I think what's cool about, for me, for grid life, one of the most humbling things is like in the past at Atlanta, was usually during like one of the last sessions on Saturday, usually Sunday sessions, you guys would come to grid to watch from grid.
I love that.
And everybody always says it's so cool to watch me work, and that's really humbling because like I look at it like in a situation like grid life, in a party environment, I'm like an orchestrator.
Yeah, and you're also the dad a little bit.
Right. But I'm telling drivers when to go, and I'm pairing certain cars up and sending cars together and holding cars at certain times because of how it translates on track and the show that it puts on.
Yeah.
Because the most accurate way to describe this is like Guitar Hero.
Right.
So you see the things moving down the line.
Yeah.
You see the chords before they get to you.
Okay.
Those are
pre-planned.
I see that before the drivers do.
Yeah.
So as a driver, you're sitting there and you're looking at me or the car's in front of you. You don't know what's behind you, but I do.
Right.
So when drivers put absolute faith in me to, hey, I promise I'm going to do what's best for you and the show. If a driver doesn't like it on track, 9 times out of 10 in the pits later, they'll come to me and thank me because of how rad it looked or how much fun they had.
Right.
Because I see those chords, I see those cars coming down the line, and I know what's going to work.
Yeah.
But in competition, no. It's like, two cars that are predetermined based on qualifying. You line them up, you send them, and then when...
That's true. You don't have any... You don't get to cultivate it at all. Yeah,
yeah, so...
I hadn't thought about that, but that's why I wanted to ask you that.
And any time that I'm asked to do a competition event, I'll... Most of the time, I'll be like, yeah, man, I'll go. I'll do this, but... Not long after I start doing it for them, I tell them, hey, man, I'm kind of being underutilized here. Like, anybody can be trained to run a competition grid. I know operations. Like, if the series I was talking about, if I was going to work for them this year, it wasn't going to be just grid.
Right.
It was going to be, like, on-track operations from corner workers to grid to pre-grid before the burnout box to, you know, like, because in competition you have five-minute timeouts, you have... People need to be, their cars need to be checked. You have one more times. You have all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
All these moving parts. And I was going to manage that because after Drift Indy, after a couple years as Drift Indy, that's when the FD, the Formula Drift Pro-Am program really kind of took off and became a regional thing. And Drift Indy created the Midwest Drift Union. And that was our Formula Drift Pro-Am series that we ran for almost a decade.
That long?
Yeah. I think it was maybe 9 years. I think I missed the last year of MDU because I had moved I was working at Fortune Auto.
Right.
But anyway, I did 8 of the 9 or 7 of the 8 years we did. And of those years, I started out doing grid. I moved into judging. I judged for a season or two, and then by the end of it, for the last half of my time there, I was operations manager.
Right.
So it wasn't just on grid. But because I remember like coming back to grid with grid life, I was super nervous. I was like, man, I forgot how to do this.
Right.
And not to mention grid life is just a completely different animal in itself. But now I've built this new style of running grid. And what's really nice is like, because I came into this like just me, myself, and I, and I got to know everybody. And Cone and I think Cone's thing was like, hey, I want to be out there with you. I said, yeah, cool, come hang.
Right.
And then...
Yeah, it originally just started as I knew you as a buddy.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to go see what you do up there.
Yeah. And then coming to hang out up on grid turned out to being on grid.
Yeah.
And then that turned into, I've got way too many radios with Road Atlanta talking to me, you talking to me. And
then it was that first year at Road Atlanta where I was talking to you, Adam.
Yeah.
We could, like, visually see each other, but we're looking at two different halves of the track.
And we were also trying to keep, like, dummies from jumping on the track, too.
Right.
Yeah.
A couple times we've had to hold track for dummies. But,
and in that sense, like, Cone kind of became, like, my spotter.
Right. And you really, especially when it's so loud and, like, you have to have somebody else out.
And I'm always talking to drivers, too. Like, drivers are always, hey, I want to follow this guy, or hey, I'm overheating. Like, I'm on grid, I'm constantly, and you know this, like, from the pits, like, before you send cars, drivers are always wanting to talk to you, and they have helmets, and the cars are loud, so I can't wear a headset.
Right. Yeah, and there's a lot of like little hurdles to jump over that make it a thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't just happen.
So to have, and not to mention like corner workers, like traditional corner workers are always talking on the radio.
Always.
So if it's,
especially in drift because they don't actually have that much to do. So like, right. Oh, that was cool.
Yeah. And if I hear someone on the radio, I hold track. Hey, was that for me? So
that's where
Cone really like is super valuable. Like he's got the radio, he's listening. And when someone, you or anybody that says, hey, hold track, there's a car off or whatever, he tells me, hey, hold track. And
it's a big time buffer.
It's like a super helpful. And when he thumbs up to me, like when I get a thumbs up from him, like it's just hot track, like it's just car after car.
And you're just telling him who goes when and
right. Yeah. And like I said, like after the first session, I've got a pretty good idea of like, all right, this guy probably doesn't need to have too many cars behind him because he's not a good person to follow. Or
You got to see the driver's strengths and weaknesses and build the show kind of around that.
Yeah, and then also like
it's got to be fun for them and for the spectators too.
Yeah, exactly. And then I see like if I've got like a gnarly 3 or 4 car lineup in the pro line, right? And I see more cars coming back to grid from a lap, I'll hold them. I'll stack up the good stuff. Send some buffer cars. Like it's all just like it's like Guitar Hero, man.
It's been I guess a fun 6 years.
Yeah.
And we've worked, I think we've learned to work pretty well together.
Yeah, I think so.
It's, I'm looking forward to tomorrow. We're doing like a Thursday kind of media buddy day, basically, at Willow Springs and Horseleaf Mile and Balcony. So, but yeah, we definitely just made a big show. We have 44 minutes. It's not bad.
Perfect.
I got to call Chris back. He keeps bugging me. Where do people find out more about Fortunato?
So yeah, like I said, we have two websites. www.fortune-auto.com is our main site. That's our. You'll find all the descriptions there. If you're on a desktop, you'll see an application list with spring rate recommendations and bio on the product, and digs in deep on like the custom and the modular and the rebuildable aspects of the coilovers. And at the bottom of every page, 500 series, 510 series, dreadnought, whatever, there's a buy now link, and that takes you to our store, which is shop-fortune-auto.com. And that's where you'll find direct links to purchase, because we don't do any like over the phone orders or anything like that. It's, you know, if you called us and for whatever reason you wanted us to place your order, we're going to do it through our website anyway. Right. So, and when you order a set of coilovers, you have all those drop downs in the bottom for custom spring rates and, you know, additional add-ons. Our service form is all there. We have a spring selector form if you don't know what spring rates you need. But also like sales@fortune-auto.com. That goes to our main hub, and it's dispersed out to the department that needs it. 10 to 6 every day Eastern Standard Time. 877-227-0260. You can always call us to ask questions or anything like that, check on order status, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think you actually did make a slip angle coupon code too, so
put
that in there, and I think it was 5% off. So.
Yeah, slip angle, all caps, slip angle at checkout at shop-fortune-auto. .com.
See if any of our nerds buy some coilovers.
Yeah, because that's the thing about discount codes. I want to track to see who's getting all the attention. But it's right. Like 5% doesn't sound like a lot, but like I can't remember. I think it's
like 100, 180, 120.
I think 500 series, it's up to like $90 off.
Yeah.
I think 510 series, it's up to 130 off. Super low specs, up to 105, 110 bucks off, which is more than shipping. So you're saving even more than your shipping costs. So
I've been kind of excited about it. I'll be reporting back on the 510s, the custom.
We should do a follow up, like little segment of an episode too. I want to hear what you think about it.
Yeah, I'll call you on the way home from the track.
Perfect. Yeah, we'll do that.
And as always, our show is proudly assisted into its existence by our buddies over at Apex Pro, apextrackcoach.com, FCP Euro, with their lifetime parts guarantee. And we really appreciate the ever-growing and awesome Patreon listeners. So I'm going to turn this thing off. We're going straight to Willow. We'll see you guys soon.
Slip Angle was created by Austin Cabot and Adam Jabay, co-hosted by Derek Yarbrough, and production by Abram Schmucker, who mixes all of our terrible audio. If you like the show, please rate us and review us on iTunes, and come and find us in the pits at a grid live to say hello.